Thank you for listening to this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more teachings or to subscribe to our podcast, as well as information about our congregation, visit our website at forerunnerfellowship.org.
So this morning, as we are coming close to the end, we got this session and one more on our Love One Another Deeply series. This morning's message is called The Benefits of Loving Well. You know, most of this series, we've been focused on the do's and don'ts, the ways that the Word exhorts us to love well, the ways that the Word exhorts us to don't do these things, because that wouldn't be loving well. We've been, in a lot of ways, we've been looking at it, this subject, kind of from that angle. But I thought, here as we kind of get to the end, and it could have made as much sense at the beginning, but here as we kind of get to the end, I want to talk about some of the benefits, some of the fruit, some of the joy, some of the good stuff. When we're a community, when we, whether we're an individual or we're a part, individuals a part of a community that's loving well, like effectively, there are some benefits that are profound that I want for us to, I want to highlight for us and get us kind of thinking and seeing that so that our hearts can be strengthened by it. So first, kind of the golden rule, Matthew 7:12. Just think about what the impact of this verse is in relationship to this whole series we've been doing on loving well. So in everything, do to others what you would have them do to you. For this sums up the law and the prophets. This idea, I mean, it's love. Treat others the way you want to be treated. Do unto others. It's really, it's love others in a way that you would want that reciprocated. And I just think about how many times it's easy for us to say things that we would not want said to us. How easy it is to respond. I'm thinking about my interactions with my kids sometimes. I'm like, oh man, I would not want anybody to treat me the way I just treated my kids. I would not want anybody to say to me something the way that I just said it, you know, to this precious one that I love. Just thinking about that as kind of part of our framework, that we're to love others as we would want to be loved, as we would want to be treated. But here's the thought process behind it. It's Jesus. He's not just saying, do right. He's actually kind of dangling a little carrot in front of us and saying, you know, if you'll love others the way you want to be loved, they'll probably love you that way. Like, there's probably a return on that investment. I mean, that's kind of the, it's not just do it so that, you know, you can have a conceptual idea of this is what I ought to do for you because that's how I would want it back. But even the thought process that if I do this for you, there's really a good chance some of that's going to be reciprocated. Well, Paul says it pretty clear in 2 Corinthians 12:15, calling this the equation of loving well. 2 Corinthians 12:15. So I will very gladly spend for you everything I have and expend myself as well. If I love you more, will you love me less? What a great statement. Not just a cool phrase, but like a life mantra. I mean, at least in the back of our head to be thinking about this, it's a reasonable equation that if you love somebody well, the likelihood of them loving you back bad, them returning, you know, evil for your good, it's not how it normally works, and especially in church context, because we're talking about, this is how Paul's talking about how we're to relate to one another within the church. There's a measure of expectation that if we love others well, we'll be loved back well. And just think for a moment, kind of let some of the moments run through your head of the ways that you've been loved well, and just for today, so that you can kind of do a little bit of calculating, think about how many of those cases you'd made a love investment first, or you'd made a love investment before that, at least, that you were loved, and really, the case could be made because you loved first. You loved others well, and that love was reciprocated. Not necessarily in that moment, maybe not, you know, in that week, but at some point in time, that relationship, because you'd loved them well, that love came back to you. That's a benefit of you loving them well. I mean, I'm just looking at like brass tacks benefits today. Like, we've got a ton of reasons to love well. But let's go. We're on the home stretch here. We've been talking about all the focus has been on them. We'll go ahead and be selfish for a minute. When we love others well, it is not an unreasonable expectation we're going to get loved back well. That is a benefit. That is a great strength because we all need that. We all long for that. We all want that. And so Paul here is as a proven apostle. He's actually saying this is an equation in the kingdom. This is how it works. That if we love well, they'll love us back well. Well, looking here now at a passage that we're pretty familiar with. This is Ephesians 3. If you've spent much time over at the prayer room, you've probably heard this prayer prayed, you know, some dozens of times on the microphone. But I want us to look at what the promise is here, what happens, because there's a corporate reach in the area of love, a corporate reach that will yield fullness, and that's not promised any other way. Look at this, Paul praying for the Ephesians, but it's not just prayer, these are Bible truths he's communicating. I pray that you being rooted and established in love may have power together with all the Lord's holy people. So there's a corporate element here, that there will be a corporate group of people that together are established in love, that there would be a power released to grasp how wide, long, high, and deep is the love of Christ, and to know this love that surpasses knowledge. So far what we've looked at just here in this little passage is it's a corporate reality. There's a corporate reach. There's a corporate anointing that rests on a people that are reaching for that love. And then look what it says. That you may be filled. So this is an equation. It's not it's a if this, then this clause. So if you do this, then this is what happens. That you would be filled to the measure of all the fullness of God. To be filled to the measure of all the fullness of God is actually contingent on being part of a corporate group of people who are reaching for love. There is no other way to get it. That it must be a corporate people together, because there's an anointing that rests on that, reaching together for love. And in that context, we now have access to this wild statement that would take 10 sermons to unpack. This wild statement that you may be filled to the measure of all the fullness of God. I'm thinking about this series that we've been doing, and I'm looking at this verse and going, I've got my fingers crossed. I'm like, Lord, help us. Help us to reach for love together that we might experience the full measure of what you have for us in God. That's just a profound idea. I'm thinking about the little benefits that we experience. We'll talk about some of those here a little bit later in this session. But I want to know what that fullness looks like, not just the pieces. I want us to experience that fullness. And the fullness is tied to a corporate people reaching for love. That's the only way to get there. Well, God makes some promises for those who love and who love well. Let's look at some of those promises. 2 Corinthians 13:11. So in 2 Corinthians 13:11, we're going to be looking at the power, one of the promises of what happens when we reach for love together. But here's the part I just want us to give a little side point on real quick, is we're looking at Bible verses that are promises about how the kingdom is ordered, how it works. There is a measure of faith that we have to engage, that if we do the if this part of the if this then this clause, that we'll get the then this part of the clause. Like, it does require us looking at it going, these are Bible verses. These aren't cute ideas. These, you know, aren't memes on the internet. These are like pieces of the Word of God that we're to believe, we're to see it and go, this is real. These are facts about how the kingdom operates. So here, let's look at one of the ways that the kingdom operates. 2 Corinthians 13:11. Finally, brothers and sisters, rejoice, strive for full restoration, encourage one another, be of it one mind, live at peace. These are all aspects of love that we've been covering in this series. And what happens if we'll do those things, if we'll reach for love in those ways, the God of love and peace will be with you. Now, I mean, the word always says that God is with us. Where can we go from his spirit to the highest heights to the lowest depths? We can't escape him. But there is something unique here, like an increased measure. We all understand the difference between, you know, God's presence is everywhere and feeling God's presence. Well, take that same thought process right here. There's a difference between God is with us and the God of peace and love being with us in an increased way that we would be able to feel, that we would be able to know and be able to relate to in a more tangible way. And this is what the word says. If we'll reach for love, again, that's a little bit of a paraphrase of all the aspects of love that were just, you know, read. But if we'll reach for love, then God's love and God's peace will be with us, will be in our midst. Again, this is Paul talking to a church, not to an individual. He's saying to the church at Corinth, if you as a corporate people will reach for love in these ways, the God of peace and love will rest on Corinth. I'm thinking about that for FF. The God of peace and love resting on us. It's a promise for communities that reach for love, is God's love and peace would rest on us. That's awesome. 1 John 4:12 says this, no one has ever seen God, but if we love one another, so it's an if clause, if we love one another, God lives in us and his love is made complete in us. God's love being made complete in us. What does that even mean? I mean, God's already complete in love, but he actually grafted us in. He brought us into the family so that that complete love could be shared. But it's not shared just because we're saved. It's shared if we love one another. Then the completeness of God's love, it's made complete in a corporate people reaching to love God and to love each other well. That's just, I like words like complete, fullness. I like these ideas that the Lord would share with us and say, I've got a path for you. The pathway is you've got to love like I love. You've got to learn to love each other. And again, we're looking at congregations being written to. 1 John wasn't written to an individual. John's writing to a congregation, and he's saying to that church, if you will love one another, you will experience God living in you and his love being made complete in your midst. Some days we might be looking at, well, this particular situation or, you know, this moment, I don't really feel like being loving or I don't really, you know, want to love this person in this way. Like, what's on the line though? Like, the complete, God's love being made complete in our midst. I really believe if we as a church will reach for this stuff and like we're thinking about it, we're actually reaching for it, I believe the word. That we will experience God's love being made complete in us. I think part of the reason we don't have language for what that means right now is we've never experienced it. I think there's a realm where you touch it and you go, oh my gosh, that's a little bit of what it means for God's love to be made complete in us. I'm just thinking about any of the gifts of the Holy Spirit, before you've experienced it, you kind of only have head knowledge. But then when you've experienced the gift of the Holy Spirit, like, oh, that's what it's talking about. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I get that. Now that makes more sense. I think this is one of those. That part of the reason that we don't have a lot of language or clarity about God's love being made complete in us is that there's a corporate reach for what that requires for that to be a reality. A lot of us are familiar with Psalm 133, but let's go there. Psalm 133, 1 through 3, a little excerpt from the Psalm. This is a promise that God gives, but it's not guaranteed outside of our reach for love. Here's what he says. Behold how good and pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. That dwell together in unity, we did a whole session, or three actually, on what unity looks like in relationship to love. It's a significant piece of what it means to love each other. I don't want to go into that right now, but I'm going to just sum this up and go, The God of peace, or rather how pleasant it is when brethren dwell together in unity, has so much to do with a church loving each other well, okay? For there the Lord commanded the blessing. That is unique language. The Bible doesn't talk like that very often. That is a pretty unique phrasing. The Lord commands a blessing. So in this context over here, the Lord doesn't command a blessing. But in this one over here, he does command a blessing. And the blessing is related to that reach of love. And he says that, you know, the next phrase is life forevermore. But I think it's interesting because the whole concept of there being a difference between if God commands that blessing and he doesn't command the blessing, life has to look different. Otherwise, God's just saying stuff for no reason. So what does it look like? What is actually being described here? Well, I think the life forevermore gives us a little bit of insight. Because when we're living in eternity, we will be living in perfect unity and in perfect love. We will be experiencing a measure of perfection, or not a measure, the fullness of perfection. And God, I believe, is saying here, there's this promise, if you'll reach for unity and love in this age, I will allow you to experience, taste, some of what that life eternal, that the eternal love and eternal reality of living in fullness, you'll get to experience that, not just that side of eternity, but this side of eternity. I command it. I command the blessing of you getting to experience the eternal realities on this side of eternity if you will walk in love, if you'll fight for that unity. That's a beautiful promise. Like, these are lofty. I won't lie. There's not a single thing on this list that's not kind of like high and lofty and just a little bit like, how do you grasp it? These are big ideas, but they're big ideas tied to a big decision, a big lifestyle, a big perspective shift. That for a people that will reach for love like this describes, and when I say this, I really mean the whole series and the 100 Bible verses we've looked at. But for a people that will reach for this, there are different blessings, there are different benefits, rewards, promises that are not promised just because we're saved. There are promises that rest on a corporate people that will reach for love in this way. I thought this one was a fun one. In Philemon chapter 1, verse 7, well, there's only one chapter, but verse 7, it says this. This is now a Paul, and he's exhorting a young minister, and he's saying, listen, you did some stuff, and the stuff you did, it blessed me tremendously. Because of the stuff you did, you have brought me joy and encouragement. And so we're going to look at it real quick and kind of see how this applies. Your love has given me great joy and encouragement because you, brother, have refreshed the hearts of the Lord's people. So Paul he's talking about this minister, and he's saying, you have refreshed people because of your love. He says, you have loved well. And the impact of you loving well is I'm observing it from afar, and you have brought me joy and encouragement. So let's just kind of see how this works. In the context of a community of people that are reaching to love each other well and to really walk out that second greatest commandment in a significant way, that there are moments where I hear about the way that you loved somebody else in this church, and it brings me great joy and encouragement. Where I hear about it and I'm like, this is awesome. I'm stronger today because I heard about what you did. Now, I wouldn't be stronger if I was in a different community that wasn't loving that way. You tracking? Well, it's the same for you. I want to even encourage you, pay attention. Watch how others are loving well and find strength in that. You don't have to, it doesn't just have to be strength that comes to you because of something you did. It could be strength that comes to you because you witness what someone else did to somebody else. And this is Paul saying, bro, you have blessed me so much. My heart is fuller. This isn't Paul just trying to be encouraging. That would be a bit disingenuous. Because it's one thing to encourage somebody, but to use this language, he's saying, you have done something that has impacted me greatly. You have brought me great joy. You have brought me great encouragement, and I've needed that. I've needed to be strengthened in those ways, and you brought that to me, and you didn't do anything to me. I watched what you did to somebody else. And the way that you loved them has so impacted me that I'm stronger. So one of the benefits of living in a community where this is a value is we can actually, if we choose to, Paul could have just ignored it. Paul could have just been like, okay, good, he did what he's supposed to do. But if instead we'll dial down and we'll realize the love and the exchanges that are happening, when someone goes out of their way to love somebody well, if we'll take that and go, I'm fueled by that. I am strengthened by that. We can actually be benefited probably on the daily around here because there are so many doing so well in so many of these realms of loving well. Some practical benefits. This is just like the most practical thing ever, but just think about how true the statement is. Loving people are happier. I mean, you ever met a loving person? They're just like really loving. They're just a sad sack. It's like, they're just like kind of useless, just skin on bones, just a like a waste of space. No, loving people are happier. They're just kind of happy, happy-go-lucky. There's a lot of reasons for that. There's things coursing through them. Just think about loving people and the way that their life is just, there's a measure of contentment. There's a measure of joy. Loving people are happier. So now, instead of thinking about that being the other guy or gal, think about you being that person. What if you were a loving person and that was coursing through you? And I mean, that's the case for a lot of us in this room, but I'm just thinking like, this is a real benefit. Who wants to be not happy? Like, that's not fun. Like, sad and, you know, angry or whatever. Like, one of the ways that we can actually gain joy in our life is to be a loving person, to grow in love. And for so many reasons, we'll look at it a little bit here in a minute. Here's Proverbs 11:25. Oh, wait, no, let's do Ephesians 5, sorry. Ephesians 5, 1 through 2. Loving people don't just live happier, they live better. Just the quality of life is better. Follow God's example, therefore, as dearly loved children, and walk in the way of love. Those that walk in the way of love, there's just a measure of their life that's just a better quality because it's more in alignment with what the Word says. And when we live, you know, we were even doing the little ministry time earlier. When we're living for our own comforts and our own thoughts and desires, we fuel that. Either sow into the spirit or sow into the flesh. You're doing one or the other all the time. And by sowing into the spirit, by sowing love, you're actually walking in the way of love. And by doing that, you're in alignment with God's ways and purposes. It's like there's way more good stuff that will happen. Like the Lord has got a conduit because he operates according to principles. You know, there's a way to be really, really nice and loving and be totally stingy with your money at the same time. You get to experience the blessings of the kindness, but you don't get to experience any of the blessings of generosity. There's a way to be able to, like, do one thing in the kingdom well and not another thing in the kingdom well. You don't get the benefits of both things. You get the benefit of the one that you're doing. By walking in the way of love, there is so much that the Lord pours out on us and allows and refreshes the soul. I mean, it's just a beautiful thing. Loving people live better. That's just, it's good stuff. Proverbs 11:25. Those who refresh others. Look at this. It's Proverbs 11:25. It says, a generous person will prosper. Whoever refreshes others will be refreshed. Finances is one way to refresh others, but there's a thousand ways. Brownies. Always brownies. Refreshing others, the promise here in Proverbs is, whoever refreshes others will himself be refreshed. It comes around in a couple of different ways. One, it comes in the form of, like we were talking about earlier, do unto others, if I love you more, will you love me less? The idea, if I refresh you, you'll probably try to figure a way to refresh me someday. That's one piece of that. But the other piece of this is, being a conduit. And by refreshing another person, by loving another person well, by finding what, you know, there's a difference between a high five and whatever would be required for that individual that would refresh them in that moment. It's going to take probably a little bit more work than a high five. I mean, every now and then a high five will do it, but that's the rare. But to refresh another person, you're being used as the hand of God in that person's life for a moment. You're bringing love and life into that person. And by doing so, that love and life didn't just go from heaven to the person, it came through you. So you were a conduit. So while refreshing that other person, you yourself are getting refreshment. Many of you are kind of nodding because you know what that feels like. You've done something for others. It's better to give than to receive, kind of a concept. Whether that's money or brownies or whatever, 1,000 ways to express love and to refresh others. That as you've done it for others, you found yourself feeling some of that same strength. That's a benefit of loving others. 2 Corinthians 12:15, loving people are well-liked. I mean, when you find a loving person, they're pretty well-liked. Look at this, 2 Corinthians 12:15. Now, we looked at this a minute ago from a different direction, same Bible verse. But I want us to look at what this is communicating in relationship to just the way a person is perceived. I mean, I know we already looked at it, but from this broader perspective, just a one-on-one action, interaction with something, cast a vision for how this impacts the life of a person who loves people well. So just to think about how this verse touches when a person lives this way, like what does that equal in their life? What does that mean about them and the way that they're received in a community? I will gladly spend for you everything. I will gladly love you well and expend myself as well. If I love you more, will you love me less? Think about what happens in relationship to buying relational equity. When we love other people, it's not just that we'll get love back. This becomes a well-liked person. Like a loving person is a well-liked person. Who doesn't want to be well-liked? You know, I mean, that's a benefit to be cherished by those near to you, to be beloved. This is a promise, actually, that if we'll be loving, we'll, like, have friends. If we'll be loving, there'll be people that actually value us. Maybe we don't have any other gifts, other strengths. Maybe we've never done anything cool. But if we're a loving person, there will be people around us that really love us, that really care about us. We'll be well-liked. I just think it's a valuable thought process because there's some people in this world that really don't have many people in their life that care about them. And I wonder if maybe an antidote, a way to fix this problem would be, have you ever tried just being really loving? Because I think probably you get a bunch of people liking you. Because that's just kind of how the world works. Because God is love and he created us with that God-shaped hole for love that's both a first commandment, love God, and a second commandment, love each other. And when we as an individual that were made in God's image, when we are loving to another image bearer, it does something. There's a transaction that occurs. And so it really helps with relationships. So if you find yourself in any relationship counseling with people and they're not particularly loving, maybe touch on this. You know, let them help and go, you know, really maybe the reason nobody likes you is because you're ornery and you're not loving. If you were loving, maybe you'd have friends. Just throwing that out there. Okay. Galatians 5:13 talks about the way that we can live unburdened. Galatians 5:13, to live in love. Look what this equals. You, my brothers and sisters, were called to be free. So the subject we're talking about is actually about freedom. You could use the term unburdened. You were called to live unburdened. You were called to live free. Let me tell you now how to get there. Don't use your freedom to indulge in the flesh. Rather, here's the way to live free. Serve one another humbly in love. The way to live free, to live unburdened, to live unhindered, to live... Just think about the concept of free versus locked up. Free versus burdened and heavy. To live free. He says, I know how you can live free. I got a way forward for you. Serve one another humbly in love and you will live free. Whoa, I want to live free. I don't want all the shackles. I don't want to be weighed down. Like, well, then learn to love each other humbly, because that's the promise. If you will do that, you will live free. Man, that is powerful. The joy that loving others brings to us, just that the smile on their face makes a smile on our face. And it's really powerful. This loving others thing is a really good idea. Let's do it. So let's talk specifically about communities that love well, and we'll wrap up here in a couple minutes. At the community level, so what does this look like as a corporate people that are trying to love well? Again, this is just me being practical and just trying to take, hey, we've been in this series for, you know, like 17 years, so let's try to get some takeaways. Communities that love well are communities that visitors want to be part of. When a visitor comes into a community that loves well, they smell it, they sniff it out, it's different. They want to be a part of that. I mean, that's pretty simple math, but it's like, it's profound. That when a visitor comes, so let's talk about Foreigner Fellowship. When a visitor comes to Foreigner Fellowship, if we love them well, they'll want to stay. A little side question is, when a visitor comes into the room, are we aware of them? That's a good question. Because we're not going to be able to love them well if we weren't even aware of their existence. So like that's a barometer, actually, as part of our reach to love well. Are we trying to help that person that's coming around feel like they belong? The difference between negative, neutral, and positive on this. Negative. Somebody comes around and we are snubbing them and we are actually kind of boxing them out and like, nope, can't get into our clique. No one wants to be a part of that. Neutral, I think, is far more default. I think neutral is far more default and completely unhelpful. Neutral is somebody comes around and there's no effort made to make them feel like they belong. There just wasn't anything mean done to them that day. Well, I didn't do anything mean to you. What more do you want from me? Like, that's neutral. But there is something sweet about efforts made to help people feel like they belong. Conversations, hey, come sit with me. Hey, going to somebody else after you've gone to that visitor, going to somebody else and say, have you met so-and-so? Go meet them. That's an effort made to make that person feel like they belong. There's a lot of ways that we can make somebody feel like they belong. And communities that love well are communities that visitors want to be a part of. I mean, that makes sense? Just kind of nod, yeah? That makes sense. But there are also places we want to be. A community that loves well is a place I want to be at. Not just the visitor. I mean, let's hope they come too. But like, I like to be happy and around people that love well. To be a community that loves well is a community that's sticky and glue for each other. It's a place that we want to be. I mean, there's something about a place where everybody knows your name, you know? Troubles are all the same. There's something about being a part of a community where there's love, there's interaction, there's the expectation of I'm going to be around loving people. What a beautiful benefit for me that I know when I come here, I'm going to be around loving people. My life is better because when I come here, I'm around you and you're loving people. And so then I'm fueled by that. It's a place that I want to be. A community that loves well is a benefit to that group of people, not just to the visitor that comes from without. It's a safe place for people in the midst of a very unsafe world. All sorts of unsafe. Also, and I don't mean safe in the, you know, safety team sense, but thank you, safety team. I mean safe in the sense of like having conversations about the Lord, having conversations about the heart, being in a place that they'll be received, because so many places they're not received. I mean, the shark fest in the corporate workplace, so often that is not a conducive environment, and it's where many people spend 40 hours a week of their life. To be able to come into an environment that's safe and to know that there's going to be a measure of like trying to know them and a measure of receptivity and an openness and be able to talk about things that matter and to not be put down. And it's a safe environment. A loving community is a safe environment. It feels uplifting. I mean, there's just so many times where the world beats us down. So many ways that are just our day-to-day and circumstances and people beat us down and just help us to feel very not loved and unwanted and uncherished. To be in the midst of a corporate people that love well is uplifting. It lifts the spirit. It brightens it. It refreshes. There is a measure of refreshment that happens just by being around each other. I love small groups for this reason, that we get to be with other people on the weekly basis in a small group setting where we're just around each other. Maybe something spiritual happens. Maybe nothing spiritual happens. I mean, there's plenty of weeks at our small group where, I mean, nothing spiritual happens hardly ever, but plenty of weeks where just being in the room and getting to hear, just seeing Brett Ader's face and just getting to hear, dude, how are you doing? And just getting to hug him. Just having that moment. That there's something sweet about that. There's something uplifting. But only if there's a community that's uplifting. Only if there's a community that's loving. I mean, otherwise it'd just be awful to be around each other all the time. But like, this is what we're cultivating. We're cultivating a community that loves well. Loving communities are healthy places for people to grow. Worship team, you can come on up. Healthy places for people to grow. What do I mean by that? It's like a greenhouse. It's a place where all the resistance is lifted and the opportunity to soar and pursue and be wholehearted and not be put down for that. A community that loves well is a healthy greenhouse to grow in our relationship with the Lord, especially for the younger in Christ. Because there's a lot of growth that the Lord actually withholds until there's pressure. But there's a significant amount of growth that the Lord permits, and it makes it a lot easier when you're in a culture that's loving. There's so much growth acceleration. It's a greenhouse to be able to grow and excel in our love for Jesus. You know, I'm thinking about this series and like how we can do our best to take this stuff away. And I want to give you guys a point of encouragement. This week or maybe next, because next session that we do will be our last one. I want to encourage you, make a journal entry. If you do that on paper or on your laptop or wherever you do that, make a journal entry of all the pieces that you've gleaned from this series, and then spend some time praying that the Lord would help those things be rooted in your life and not just lessons that you heard once in a series. Like, let's end strong in this series on loving each other deeply. And it's okay for everybody's journal entry to look different. They probably will. Because the things that touched you might be different than the ones that touched your friend, your neighbor, your husband, wife, whatever. Like, let's take the time to dial down and go, Lord, what are some of the things that I heard, the lessons that touched me, the ideas, the verses that struck me in this series? And Lord, help me to take those things and really to make them my life, not just a message that I heard.
This concludes this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more information about our congregation, visit forerunnerfellowship.org. Thank you.